And I want to begin first by thanking the families who sponsored and dedicated tonight's drasha. To thank our Talmud Torah sponsors for the month of Sivan, Justin and Abigail Rosemore, for dedicating all of the Shiurim and Drashos this month in memory of their beloved son Kobi, Chaim Yaakov David, Zichrono Levracha Ben Yosef Tzadok. And to thank our Talmud Torah sponsors for the month of Sivan, Alan and Sue Meyerowitz and family, Jason, Deborah, Justin, Rebecca, Mindy, Simcha, and all of the grandchildren for dedicating all of the Shiurim and Drashos this month in the Zechosa V'Rafua Shalima for Sue, for Shulamis Tova Bas Mindel. We hope that in the merit of our Talmud Torah, she, together with Kol Chole Yisrael, will have a complete and enduring refuah. So with that, it is an incredible zechus to be able to learn with all of you leading up to Shabbos. At least here in Baltimore, we find ourselves in the midst of what appears to be the beginning of a thunderstorm. Baruch Hashem, I just davened the fastest mincha and ma'ariv in my life. I see Richard Simon is smiling because he was there with me as well. We mamish had incredible kfitza saderach, but Baruch Hashem, you know, one of the amazing things about the whole situation with coronavirus is the ability to appreciate what you have and not to focus on what you lack. And Baruch Hashem, that we had a minyan, we were able to daven with a minyan, albeit in the parking lot of our shul, was such a beautiful schos, and at least Baruch Hashem, we're able to get a mincha ma'ariv. So, although it's stormy outside, it is beautiful, serene, tranquil, and holy in here with all of you. So it's a great schos to be able to learn Torah together as a way of preparing for Shabbos and a way of ushering in the Kedusha. And Mirat Hashem, that we begin to envelop and we begin to feel, you know, I think I've mentioned this before. This giving this shir, although of course I'd much rather be giving a drush and shul on Shabbos, but giving this shir is one of the highlights of my week. And Rabbi Soloveitchik wrote, it's a footnote in Ala Tshuva, he writes that in America, he finds there are many people who are Shomer Shabbos. But he said what's missing here, he said, are people who are Shomrei Erev Shabbos. He says, what does that mean? He says, he remembered as a child that when Erev Shabbos Thursday night came, there was a different feeling. There was a different feeling in the air. The truth is, I never really understood what Rabbi Soloveitchik meant until I had the opportunity to be in Eretz Yisrael. So in Eretz Yisrael, you feel this. In Israel, you feel this. Comes Thursday night, there's a different feeling already. And I think one of the great challenges, one of the many challenges that we encounter in the diaspora, is it's easy to keep Shabbos, but feeling Erev Shabbos is where there is a true challenge. But I've come to find that being able to learn a little bit to all of you, or give a drasha on Thursday night, Erev Shabbos, has helped me in my journey of becoming a Shomer Erev Shabbos. So, Baruch Hashem. And with that, let us begin. So what I want to begin by drawing your attention to, you know, there's a story that's told about a grandmother who was once spending the day with her grandson and decided to go ahead and take the little boy for a day by the ocean. So the little boy is frolicking around and playing in the sand and swimming. And mamish, the grandmother, of course, like every grandmother, is just attentive and mamish hovering over. But then amazingly enough, a massive wave comes along and Nebuch sweeps the child out to sea. The grandmother lifts her eyes heavenward. She says, God, I've always been an exceptionally devoted Jewess. I always davened. I said tehillim. I gave tzedakah. I volunteered. I did everything. And this is my enakel. This is my grandchild. He means the world to me. And now that's it. You just take him like that. So suddenly another massive wave comes and the little boy is washed up back on shore. He runs to his grandmother. She embraces him. Everybody's happy. The grandmother, she pauses for a moment, looks heavenward, and she says, you know, God, he had a hat. So sometimes we are especially in tune with the details. He had a hat. We're all about the details. You know, people often say the devil's in the details. The truth is, it's not the devil who's in the details, it's God who's in the details. So much of Yiddishkeit is all about the details. And so it comes as no surprise that the Torah HaKedosha is filled with a voluminous amount of details. So the fact that the Torah is detail-oriented, that's not a surprise. What's striking is what the Torah chooses to be detailed-focused on. That's where things really become very dramatic. So I'll give you examples. There are things that impact our daily lives. For example, okay, they use this one for the men, tefillin. So tefillin, Baruch Hashem, you have an opportunity to wear tefillin every single day. So we know tefillin are black, tefillin are square, tefillin have multiple parshios, and yet remember, when it comes to the Chumash, all the Torah tells us is, ukshartam li'os ayadecha, vayulato tafos b'neinecha, I have to tie a sign between my eyes, a sign on my arm, and that's all. The rest of the details are learned out from Torah Shebaal Peh, the oral tradition. It's amazing. So something that's part of my activity of daily life is the details aren't there yet. There are other parts. And the truth is we experience this in really at the end of Chumash Mos with Truma, Tetzaveh, Vayakel, Pekudeh, where the Torah went into every single last detail regarding the Mishkan. Every detail. And yet amazingly enough, the Mishkan was a once in art history event, meaning there's never going to be a Mishkan again. When Mashiach comes, whatever is going to happen with the third Beis HaMikdash, one thing is clear, which is we're not going into a Mishkan until the Beis HaMikdash is ready. Whether we're going to build the Beis HaMikdash is going to come down fully built from Shemayim, whatever is going to happen, and Meretz Hashem remains to be seen. But at the end of the day, we're not going back in yet. So we have this structure, this Ohel Moed, this tent of meeting that was so important and so pivotal and so necessary for Am Yisrael's existence for a couple of hundred years. That's all. We're a people of many thousands of years. For a couple of hundred of years, we used the Mishkan, and yet the Torah spares no detail. Every last detail is there. So tefillin, which is part of my everyday life, and not so many details in Torah Shebichsav, in the written law. Mishkan, which again only served us for a couple of hundred years, every last detail. And the truth is, we run into that in Parshas Naso as well. Because in Parshas Naso, the Torah goes into an incredible amount of information regarding a variety of topics. Specifically, two of them which I'll draw your attention to. Number one topic was what the Levitic families carried. Remember again, Shevet Levi is comprised of both the Kohanim and the Levim. So the Kohanim, we understand their role. The Kohanim, again, Kohanim, remember, by the time we're up to Parashas Nos, there's not so many Kohanim. There's Aaron and his sons, and Pinchas. So we don't have that many Kohanim. The job of the Kohanim, of course, is to do the Avodah, to engage in sacrificial service, Mishkan service, temple service. What about the Levim? So the job of a Levi, of course, is also to sing Shira, the Levim sang. But really, in the desert, the Levim had an incredible task. It was their job to transport the Mishkan. It was their job to transport the Mishkan. And they were given very specific tasks. And amazingly enough, the Torah tells us what every single Levitic family did. And don't get me wrong, it's riveting. Absolutely riveting to see who carried what. Right? But at the end of the day, why do I need to know it? Meaning, what's the message? But working backwards, and we'll get into what they carried in just a moment. Working backwards, if the Torah Kedosh is telling it to us, you see, my friends, it's very important to understand that you all know this. There's no piece of unnecessary information in the Torah. There's no extraneous word, there's no extraneous phrase, there's no extraneous parsha. Everything that is there is necessary, and everything that is included is eternally meaningful. So I'll give you an example. So the Torah Kedosha tells us about three Levitic families. B'nai Kahas, children of Kahas, B'nai Gershon, and B'nai Merari. And the Torah says as follows. They each carried something different in the Mishkan. B'nai Kahas, what did they carry? So I'll read to you the Pasuk. This is in Perek Dalet, Pasuk Tesvav. All this is in chapter 4. V'chi la'aron u'banav l'chasol says HaKodesh, v'eskok le'HaKodesh bin so ha'machaneh, So what happened? So B'nai Kahas were responsible for going ahead and carrying all of the consecrated vessels of the Mishkan. The Kohanim would go ahead and come along and cover up the utensils. And then B'nai Kahas was also part of the Levitic family. So the Kahas family, they would go ahead and carry all of the utensils. Good, so it's time to move. Kohanim would come, cover the utensils. Kahas goes ahead and carries the utensils. First family, keep this in mind. Next family, B'nai Gershon. What did B'nai Gershon do? So again, writes the Torah. So B'nai, Zos avodas B'nai Mishpachos HaGershoni La'avod Ulamasa. B'nai Gershon, they carried stuff. Okay, what did they carry? The Nasu Es Yiros HaMishkan V'es Ohel Moed. They carried the curtains. They carried the curtains of the Mishkan. Nichseyu Mechseyat HaKadosh. Now, Curtains means a variety of things. So remember again, there were curtains which demarcated between the different spaces in the Mishkan. So for example, in the Mishkan itself, right, the Mishkan was like a big rectangle. So towards the back of the rectangle was the Kodesh HaKadoshim, the Holy of Holies. There was a curtain which separated the Holy of Holies, the Kodesh HaKadoshim, from the rest of the Mishkan. But around the Mishkan, there was also another courtyard. And there were more, quote-unquote, curtains, like mechitzas, curtains that were there in the courtyard. Not only that, but remember, the Mishkan, what was the roof of the Mishkan? The roof of the Mishkan was a series of coverings. Remember, the Mishkan did not have a solid roof. So there was a roof, there was a layer that was made of the tachash. Tachash was a special animal whose hide apparently was water repellent. So the tachash, and then you had other woven layers as well. So the job of Gershon, B'nai Gershon, was to carry the curtains and all of the coverings. And then we finally come to B'nai Merari. What does Merari carry? So the Torah says, "Zos mismeres masam v'chalav adosam bi'almoid karshe hamishkan berichav va'amudav va'adonav." What does Merari carry? Merari carries the boards. Merari carries all of the boards. So whereas Gershon carries all of the curtains and coverings, Merari carries all of the boards. All of the boards, all of the planks, all of the interlocking pieces. Okay, so the Torah tells us about three families. The family of Kahas, who carries all of the consecrated utensils. The family of Gershon, who carries all of the coverings and curtains. And the family of Merari, who carry all of the planks and boards and interlocking pieces. And asks the Lubavitcher Rebbe Zecher Tzadik the Kaddish Lebracha, why do I need to know this? Why do I need to know this? Again, don't get me wrong. It's interesting. And if you want to tell me from a historical perspective that I'm supposed to understand what happened in the desert, okay, I could hear that. Although remember, the problem with that is the Torah is not a history book. Torah is not a history book. The Torah is not a story book. We know that because remember, there's a principle which governs the juxtaposition of different sections, which is Ein muktam u'me'ucher b'Torah. The Torah doesn't necessarily follow a chronological order. Well, if it's a history book, a lack of chronology certainly undermines its effectiveness as a history book. So says Lubavitcher Rebbe, you're giving me all of this information about what all of these Levitic families carried and why. And the Rebbe says something absolutely amazing. Absolutely amazing. Lubavitcher Rebbe says, he says that the three families really represent three different kinds of people. It's not just three families. There are Kahas people, there are Gershon people, and there are Merari people. Says the Rebbe, what does that mean? My dear friends, listen to this. Listen to how incredibly profound and insightful. I want to tell you something amazing. This is just a commercial break for a second. You're going to see, the Rebbe's insight is amazing. What's even more amazing is his ability to see this in the psukim. You know, great people look at the world with different sets of eyes. You know, an ordinary person sees the world one way. Great people see the world in a different way. They see everything. And the Rebbe, what I'm about to share with you, the Rebbe saw this in the psukim. So listen to this. So the Rebbe says, what does it mean that Kahas, Gershon, and Merari represent different kinds of people? So Kuri explains. He says, there are Kahas people. Kahas people are the kind of people who are able to infuse holiness into everything. They're always carrying the sacred utensils. Remember again, what did Kahas do? They carried all the sacred utensils. So Kahas people, they're always floating on a cloud of Kiddusha. On a cloud of Kiddusha, on a cloud of holiness. You know, we all know people like this, right? These are the people, you know, when something happens, they say Gamzu Latova. Now, of course, remember, we all say Gamzu Latova, but most of us don't really mean it, right? What we do is we say it because we want to sound from, even when things are not so great, so we say Gamzu Latova. Really, we have a whole bunch of different words that we want to say and that we're often saying under our breath, right? But Lamais, we say, but you know, there are Kahas people. There are Kahas people. And Kahas people, it's just the everything. They feel God in everything. They experience God in everything. They see the Kiddusha in everything. And they're able to infuse Ruchnius and holiness into everything they do. They carry the utensils of God. They carry the utensils of the Mishkan with them every single step of the way. To them, nothing is mundane. To them, everything is a manifestation of the divine. To them, everything is an expression of the Yad Hashem. To them, everything brings them closer to the Ribono Shel Olam in one way or another. Those are Kahas people. Anything and everything they do is infused with Kiddusha. In fact, again, even the name Kahas, Kahas means to gather, to bring inside. Kahas brings Hashem into everything. This, of course, is the highest level. Remember again, how does the Shulchan Aruch start? Same way the right to Balatanya also begins, the Tanya like this. The most important principle, Shivisi Hashem Lenegdi Samid. I place God before me at all times. What does that mean? To live a life of God awareness. And to live a life where I could see HaKadosh Baruch Hu in anything and everything. I see the Ribon Shalom in nature. I see the Ribon Shalom in my fellow man. I see the Ribon Shalom in myself. I see the Ribon Shalom in my life events. I see HaKadosh Baruch Hu everywhere. Those are Kahas people. Everywhere they go, they're carrying God with them. They gather God into everything that they do. And they always take their Kiddusha with them wherever they go. But then there are Gershon people. Says the Rebbe, who are the Gershon people? So this is amazing. He says, what's Gershon's job? So remember again, the Torah says Gershon carries the curtains. What's the point of a curtain? What does a curtain do? A curtain is a line of demarcation. It keeps something in and something out. Right? Think about this for just a moment. The greatest example, as I mentioned before, of a curtain in the Mishkan and later on in the Beis HaMikdash. Remember, the Beis HaMikdash really only had one curtain. Right? That was the curtain that divided between the Holy of Holies, the Kodesh HaKadoshim, and the Kodesh and the rest of the Beis HaMikdash. The Mishkan had more. But what was the job of the curtain? The job of the curtain was to safeguard the holiness of the Kodesh HaKadoshim. The mundane cannot enter in there. And says that it is something amazing. There are people in life who are always struggling with their spirituality. Always struggling. And by the way, it's not just spirituality. There are people who are always struggling with happiness. There are people who are always struggling with optimism. But we'll focus on spirituality for just a moment. So what happens a lot of times when a person struggles? Right? Sometimes again, you know, we all have our nesonos, we all have our tests, and we all have our challenges. And we all have the thing or the things with which we struggle. So what does Gershon, what does a Gershon Jew do? So the Rebbe says something amazing. The Gershon Jew creates protective barriers in order to safeguard his or her holiness. The Gershon Jew recognizes his struggles, understands his weaknesses, and therefore erects his curtains around his Holy of Holies in order to protect it and in order to prevent anything from tarnishing that holiness. The Gershon Jew understands his strengths, but he also is acutely aware of his weaknesses. And he understands that if he does not create protective barriers for himself, then ultimately, again, his weaknesses will become exposed and will ultimately, again, spill over into every area of his life. To give you just a simple example of a Gershon behavior, right? A person struggles with alcoholism, and they're in recovery. They're in recovery. So again, remember, everyone will tell you, is it a good idea for the recovering alcoholic to meet his friends at a bar for drinks? Even though he's just going to order water. Just going to have water. Bad idea. Why? Because, again, if you're in recovery, you have to create your gedarim. You have to create your protective fences. You have to create your boundaries, because without them, God forbid you put yourself in sakana. What's true for the person in recovery from alcohol is true for all of us. We're all in recovery for something, right? Some of us are in recovery for lashon hara. Some of us are in recovery for immorality. Some of us are in recovery for a lot of different things, but we're all in spiritual recovery for something. So the Gershon Jew says, you have to put up your curtains. You see, my friends, a lot of times in life, we do things and we think that those things we engage in won't really impact us. And this has a variety of different things. You see this all the time. We allow ourselves to be exposed to things, or we allow things into our homes, or we allow things into our lives, and we just assume this is not going to impact me. I could be whoever I want to be, and nothing is going to hurt me. You know, if you want to delve, there's a lot of fascinating dispute about the psychology of sin. Why do people sin? Why do people sin? It's a good question. I'll tell you why. You know, I spent a little bit of time in public accounting. So, you know, if you take out your balance sheet, right, and you go ahead and you, all right, you want to call it assets and liabilities or your pros and cons, take out a balance sheet, right, and put your sin on the top of the balance sheet. But not just any sin. It's got to be like your favorite sin, like the juiciest sin, the most wonderful sin that you could imagine, right? Put it on top. Don't share this with other people. But, you know, put it on top. And write your pros and your cons. Pros and your cons. What you're going to get from the sin and what you're going to lose. And I will make you a money-back guarantee. The cons list always wins. It always wins for one simple reason. Whatever you're going to get out of the sin, whatever you're going to get, no matter how much, I know how much pleasure, it's limited, it's temporal, and it's fleeting. But the cons side is lasting, potentially eternal, and unspeakable damage. I'm telling you, you could try this exercise. It doesn't matter how much you love the sin. I'm 1,000% correct about anything in life. This is the one thing I'm correct on in life. You can ask my wife. The only thing I'm correct on in life is this particular nekuda. So why do we sin? If the cons always outweighs the pros, why do we do it? So there's a lot of machlokes about that. A lot of machlokes. The Chaim Shmulevitz has his approach, but you know, there's a simple approach. The simple approach is because at the end of the day, I think that I could sin and still be the same person. Meaning, I want to be a good person. I want to be a good person. I want to be a holy person. I want to be a righteous person. And I don't really believe that sin is going to change that. I could be who I want to be. I could be who I want to be. And yet still engage in the behaviors I want to without letting them affect me. Now, of course, we know that that doesn't make any sense. It's totally illogical. It's like being on a diet. I gave this mashal a different shir. It's like being on a diet, but say, okay, fine. The one thing I'm going to allow myself is 4 pieces of chocolate cake a day. That's it. Other than that, mamish yaharik v'yavar. I'm sticking to the diet. I'm not going to deviate at all. Okay, that sounds great. You know, fantastic. Obviously, again, if that's the allowance that you're allowing yourself, then the diet is out the window. It's the same thing with spirituality. Just we don't believe it. I think that I could really do whatever I want, act however I want, talk however I want, engage in whatever I want, and yet still be the good person I really pine and yearn to be. And Gershon tells us that is not true. Gershon says at the end of the day, you have to put up your curtains. You have to decide in life, what are you allowing in and what are you keeping out? And this, my friends, is perhaps one of the most fundamental decisions we make day in and day out. Where are you going to put your curtains? What are you going to allow into your life, into your heart, into your soul, into your home, and what are you blocking out? The Gershon Jew understands his weaknesses. He understands his weaknesses, and therefore he understands that he needs to go ahead and put up his curtains. Because if he doesn't put up his curtains, if he doesn't put up his barriers, then ultimately, again, his weaknesses will simply overrun him. And then says the Rebbe, there is the Merari Jew. And this is incredible. What does Merari do? So the Torah points out, remember, what did we say? Merari, he carries Karshi HaMishkan, Brichav, Va'amudav, Va'adonav. What does Merari carry? You know what Merari carries? He carries all of the heavy stuff. All of the heavy stuff. Merari carries the boards and the sockets and the joints and the this. Everything. Says the Rebbe so beautifully. Merari is the individual who goes through life who feels so weighed down by the burdens of existence. He feels so overwhelmed by the peckle, by the burden, by the boards that feels like are breaking his back. The Rebbe says Merari is the individual who travels through life with such incredible baggage. Maybe it's baggage from trauma. Maybe it's baggage from failures. Maybe it's baggage from all the things that we have baggage from. That's the Merari Jew. And do you know what happens? after you carry around your baggage for long enough? Do you know what happens after you schlep around the boards of life difficulty, shattered dreams, unmaterialized aspirations for long enough? Merari. You become maror. You become bitter in life. And so there are people who feel so overwhelmed by the enormity of the burden they feel upon their shoulders that they just become bitter. And the Rebbe says, why do they become bitter? Part of that bitterness is fueled by the fact that they feel powerless to change. This is my life. This is my plight. This is my peckle. And there's nothing I can do to change it. As such says the Lubavitcher Rebbe so beautifully. Do you want to know why the Torah spends so much time on telling us about the Levitic families and what they carried, what they schlepped? Because it's not just a lesson about the Levitic families. It's a lesson about you, it's a lesson about me, it's a lesson about all of us. Because most of us fit into one of these three categories. Some of us are zocha to be kahas Jews. We carry the holy utensils, we bring God into everything. We are tight with God, we are in love with God, and not just like a friendly love, a passionate love with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. There is Kedusha everywhere, there's godliness everywhere, there's God awareness in every corner of life. Some of us are kahas Jews. And some of us are Gershon Jews, always struggling. Because I know I'm acutely aware of my weaknesses. And I know that no matter how much I try to pretend that they don't exist, they exist. I know that if I ignore them, they come back with a vengeance. So I spend my life putting up my curtains. What comes in? What stays out? Where should I draw the line? Where are my borders? How do I secure my spirituality? How do I make sure that only the right influences come into my life, come into my heart, they come into my soul? And then there are those of us who are Merari Jews. The Merari Jews schlep the burdens of life with them every single day. They schlep the burdens. Again, all the burdens, we don't even have to go through it because we know it. The burden of failure, the burden of difficulty, the burden of burnout, the burnout of, again, shattered, unmaterialized dreams and aspirations, all of the burdens of inadequacy, the burdens of life trauma, all of those burdens. And Merari carries them around day in and day out. But Merari feels powerless to do anything about it. And so what happens when you shoulder your peckle in life? What happens when you schlep the boards of life difficulty with you day in and day out? Merari, you become bitter. You become bitter, and the world becomes a dark place. So what do you do? So if you're a kahas Jew, you're fortunate. Very fortunate. Baruch Hashem. Halavai v'shal bizocha. If you're a Gershon Jew, you're also very fortunate. Because to be so self-aware that you know your weaknesses and you know how to put up your curtains is incredible. But I want to focus for the last few moments that we have together. And what do you do if you are a Merari Jew? Because I think many of us find ourselves in that spot in life. And if not always, hopefully, but definitely there are times where I just feel that I'm just schlepping a lot on my shoulders. I feel the boards of burden weighing down on me. All of the burdens we've discussed before. And the truth is, I feel powerless to change it. I feel powerless to do anything differently. And the truth is, it leads to an incredible sense of bitterness, sadness, and despair. When I think to myself, I guess this is my life forever. So what do I do if I'm a Merari Jew? So I want to share with you something amazing. Really incredible. If you skip to the end of the parsha. So one of the other great questions that we have in Parshas Naso is the Torah goes through the list of the karbanos of the Nisim. The dedication offerings of the tribal princes. So there are 12 tribal princes, right? And each prince goes ahead and brings, each Nasi brings his karban. Now, the karbanos were identical, absolutely identical. Yet the Torah HaKadosh goes ahead and repeats them over and over and over. And obviously, once again, that repetition is not just repetition for repetition's sake, but it's to teach us a lesson. So what's the lesson? So I want to share with you something amazing. So you'll look in the Chumash, Perek Zayin Pasuk Yud Dalet. So remember again, there's a lot of repetition because all of the tribal princes brought the same exact dedication offering. So one of the things that they all brought was Kaf Achos Asara Zahav Melea Ketores. literally translated, kaf achas, which means ultimately, again, one spoon, asara zahav, weighing 10 shekels of gold, melea kitores, was filled with incense. So this princely gift really consisted of two things. Right, number one, it was a golden spoon, which was 10 shekels of weight. And number two, it was incense. So the great tzaddik, Divrei Meir, Rav Meir of Premishlan, who was a disciple of the Baal Shem Tov HaKadosh, he lived 1703 to 1773. So Rav Meir of Premishlan says something amazing. Now, again, I'm about to share with you an incredibly chassidish avart. So if you are chassidically challenged, right? So you might cringe a little bit because it's going to be a little bit of a drasha. But if you are chassidically challenged, reach deep inside yourself and work on that, because the Torah Sachasidos has so much to teach us and so much to light up our world. So listen to how the Divrei Meir, the Rebbe Premishlan, understands this pasuk. Watch this. Kaf achas. He says kaf, we translate it as spoon. But the truth is kaf, lichfof, could also mean to bend, or to move. One movement, asara. Says the Rebbe, listen, get ready for this. This is so incredible. Says the Rebbe, what's asara? Asara, remember the numerical value of asara is yud. Is yud. Yud, right? Right with the letter yud, 10. The Rebbe says yud is a yid, is a Jew, is a Jew. Kaf achas, asara. If the Jew, just makes one movement, zahav, he could make himself into gold. He could make himself into gold. Kaf achas, one little movement in a new direction of life. Asara, yud, the yid, zahav, becomes golden. Rav Meir Premishlan says, do you know what the greatest problem in life is? People think that in order to be successful, you have to engage in dramatic accomplishment. That in order to be successful in life, you have to do something amazing. He says, it's not true. All you have to do in life is kaf achas. Move yourself in one little way. Do something. It doesn't have to be big. It doesn't have to be dramatic. It doesn't even have to be sustainable. Just do something. Move yourself forward in one way. Engage in some little bit of course correcting or course adjusting activity. Just make a movement, any movement, and you're golden and you'll be great. And I think what the Rebbe is teaching us is something so amazing. Do you know why so many of us remain as Merari Jews? Why so many of us remain as Merari Jews? Because at the end of the day, we think that change is impossible. Because we often look at change as like a large comprehensive framework, right? Change has 15 different parts, different models of change, right? So there's 5 steps of change, 12 steps of change, 7 steps of change, this and that. Okay, all true. It is absolutely change. There are many steps to change. And so sometimes the Merari, who's been sitting with the boards of life difficulty on his shoulders for who knows how long, has such a bleak outlook because says, you know, a change is too complicated. There's too much involved, too many steps. Is it sustainable? And so what does he assume? Therefore, change is impossible and just remains as is. And what does the end of the parasha come to tell us? You don't have to remain a Merari, but how do I get out of it? These boards are weighing me down and they've been sitting on my shoulders for decades, for years. It's very simple. Kaf achas, asara. If you're a Jew, if you're a Yud, if you're a Yid, all you need to do is just make a movement. Just make a movement. Just do one thing a little bit differently. Just engage in a little bit of course correcting activity. Just try to push yourself forward in one way. And if you do that, Zav, you are golden. You see, if you are a Merari in life and you're carrying all the boards of life difficulty and all those boards, ultimately, again, of failures and destroyed dreams and everything we mentioned before, the truth is you often can't offload all of that at once. you can't necessarily transform out of a Marari identity in the snap of a finger, but you can dramatically change your disposition with just one small act. The greatest obstacle to change is that we think change has to be big, comprehensive, sustainable, and consistent. Well, good luck with that, because most of us have difficulty with consistency. Most of us have difficulty with big projects. So says the Premijlana, says the Divrei Meir, have a better idea. Just do something. Just do something. Choose whatever it is. It could be something small. One little movement, one little calf, one little movement, one little bending this way, going this way, adjusting in that way. All you need to do sometimes to change your perspective is one little thing in life. You don't have to do something dramatic. You just have to do something. And that's how you change from a Merari. So if you're a Kahas, you're lucky. And if you're a Gershon, you're exceptional. You're exceptional. And if you're a Merari, the good news is you need not remain that way for the rest of your years. All you need to do to begin to offload the boards of life difficulty is kafachas, is do something. And I think that this is incredibly dramatic on a variety of levels. You know, the world around us sometimes seems so crazy. And with the events this week that occurred in our country, with the death of George Floyd and the ongoing riots and protests and unrest, you know, the world sometimes seems so broken. And again, this is not, I'm not going to use this year as an opportunity to speak about that, but, you know, what happened to that man, right? I don't know who he was and I don't know his story, but no one deserves to die being pinned underneath the knee of another person. No one, no human being should ever be treated like that. Whatever their background is, whatever their race is, whatever their religion is, no one deserves that. What happened to him is a tragedy and a stain on our nation. And what you see unfolding as a result is also, Baruch Hashem, there are so many good people who are protesting and making their voices heard in appropriate ways. And then there are others who are exploiting this for their own gain and for their own agendas. And sometimes we look around the world and, or we look, I don't even mean the world, like we look around our country and we say to ourselves, like, things are so broken. How do you ever fix this? And I think a lot of times people kind of get caught up in comprehensive solutions. I don't know that there's a comprehensive solution to address racism. But I'll tell you, there's a small step you could take. Speak nicely about other races. Don't make jokes about other races. Don't use derogatory terms, even if they're Yiddish words, for people of color. Make sure that you know how to treat other human beings with dignity and respect. When you pass someone on the street, whether they're Jewish, not Jewish, white, black, whatever they are, say hello. Be makdim shalom l'chol adam. Mekabel adam chol adam b'sever panim yafos. Learn how to be an engaging human being who knows how to respect every single other person. Is that going to combat racism? Is that going to get rid of anti-Semitism? Is that going to go ahead and rid our nation of all the hatred and animosity that is literally tearing us apart? Do you understand what a hate-filled nation we now live in? Our political leaders behave like overgrown children who are constantly just battling back and forth. And that's everyone. And it's pathetic and it's degrading and it's humiliating to look at the leadership of the strongest nation on the face of the earth act like this. And there's a trickle-down effect. And you look at social media, how people deconstruct each other in such terrible ways. And you look at, again, how every, it's like a tinderbox and everything. And how is it that the death of an African-American man results in swastikas and graffiti in shuls in Los Angeles? What's the connection? Because we sit on like a pot, a simmering pot of hatred. And as soon as there's an opportunity for something to boil over, it boils over in every single way. I don't know how to fix the problem. I do not. I don't even have an inkling as to how to fix it. And I would bet that most of the people on the share tonight probably don't have an inkling as to how to fix it either. But just because you can't come up with a comprehensive solution doesn't mean you can't do something. We can each be better. There's a lot of racism that exists in our community. Yeah, I mean in the Jewish community. There's a lot of it. And we have to stop it. And we have to stop it. And if your children say something that they hear at the yeshiva, they pick up, you have to shut it down. And you have to say, we don't talk that way in our house. We don't talk about other human beings like that in our house. And if someone in shul tells you a joke, or a chaver tells you a joke, or someone uses a word, shut it down. Say, there's a zero tolerance policy for this. We don't talk that way. Jews don't talk that way. Jews don't refer to other human beings. You know, we are not the only ones who are created B'Tselem Elokim. We're not the only people created in the image of God. Every human being was created in the image of God. Every single human being, every race, every religion, every creed, everyone. So how could we speak negatively about any B'Tselem Elokim? And doing so, understand, is demeaning the creator of that Tzelem Elokim. You speak negatively about another human being, you're not just demeaning that person, you're demeaning the Ribono Shel Olam. So while it's true that I can't offer you a comprehensive solution to racism or anti-Semitism, but I can tell you that starting right from this moment, each of us could do things a little bit differently. And each of us could try to be a little bit better in our own ways, and in our own lives, and in our own homes, in our own communities. And although that's not a comprehensive solution, it's a kaf achas. It's a one movement solution. It's something. It's a beginning. And sometimes in life, all you can do is just a little bit of movement. And in our own lives as well. Don't always look for the complete solution. If you're a Merari, don't get caught up in finding the comprehensive solution, because you'll end up waiting your whole life for the comprehensive solution. Just do something. If you're stuck in a rut in life, if you're buckling under the pressure of the boards of your existence, just do something. And you'll find that when you do something, the asara, the yud, the yid, the Jew, zav, becomes beautiful, becomes golden, and becomes spiritually luminescent. So we see, says the Rebbe, that what looks to us like extraneous, unnecessary information is not only necessary, is not only meaningful, is not only important, but in fact gives us everything we need to know in order to lead beautiful, meaningful, and successful lives. We'll stop over here and take the opportunity to wish all of you a good and Erev Shabbos and a beautiful Shabbos Kodesh. And Mirat Hashem, look forward to learning with all of you next week. Have a wonderful evening, and thank you again for joining us.